The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Unpost. MyBills.ie. Help save time with bill payment online for free. Unpost. Do more. The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Unpost. Sterling and dollars are commission free at selected post offices. Unpost. Do more.
Hello there, and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome indeed to the programme this morning, and listening to the headlines there, and I'm listening to looking at the Irish Daily Mirror. Hijackers flew jet towards remote island. I tell you this much, anything you put in print is going to be out of date in, it seems to me, about 30 seconds as the story about that jet changes and changes. That's the Daily Mirror. The Sun, 250k sack of cash, and they have Michael O'Leary there on the front page, and indeed he and the jockey Davy Russell are all over the papers today. And congratulations to all. It was a great day for Irish folk and Irish horses and Irish jockeys in Cheltenham, except of course for injuries to Ruby Walsh. But anyway, it was great, and congratulations to all. The Irish Daily Star, my tribute to Dead Pal, and again that's a story about Davy Russell. Now the Irish Daily Mail, they have leading with the story about the man who, the epileptic man who was told to stop drinking, to stop driving, I should say, and the tragic death of those two little girls, which is just a heartbreaking story for everybody involved, but most particularly the two little girls and their family. The Irish Independent have a picture there on the front of Martin Moore, Mike Ross, Gordon Darcy and Rory Best having a little wander down the Champs-Élysées, looking all very relaxed and kind of sombre, really. Obviously, Brian O'Driscoll, it's going to be saturation coverage on Brian O'Driscoll again this weekend. I'd say at this stage he's probably getting tired of it. But anyway, it's an important day for them in Paris. Shatterbroke cabinet rules over state jet. That's the kind of thing that people go bananas over. But their main story, ESB makes 415 million profit after hiking prices by 8%. Well, I suppose you would, wouldn't you, increase your profits if you hike the prices? But anyway, the Irish Examiner, they have a picture of Davy Russell celebrating his win yesterday delighted with himself. Main story, banks to get tough on homeowners over debt. Obama toasts BOD after Shamrock treatment. And US software security firm accused of paddock whackery for booze poster. And they're talking about, you know, the kind of ways that people are represented. And this uses leprechauns to represent Irish people. And when comparing parade attendance around the world, it uses the Statue of Liberty as a symbol of New York, Sydney Opera House for Australia, the CN Tower for Toronto, and for Ireland, a pint of Guinness. Now, stereotype or what? The Irish Times, photograph of our Prime Minister and President of the United States. Taoiseach uses St. Patrick's Day events to urge action on US immigration reform. Ambulances miss response time targets, and they're more or less set the outline of what's on the front pages. But I think what has everybody absolutely bewildered at this stage is what happened to that plane. I mean, where is it? And where, more importantly, are the people? And is it even imaginable that some might have survived? Hard to imagine, but... And people are getting really irritated because they don't believe the authorities when the authorities tell them that they don't know. But let me go to Tanya Branigan, who's the Guardian's China correspondent. She's in Beijing at the moment. Tanya, good morning to you. You've been following the story and talking to the families. What kind of level of information is available there at the moment?
Well, really no more than any of the rest of us have, and perhaps in some ways rather less. Like us, they've been very much reliant on the briefings coming out of Malaysia. I mean, Malaysian airline staff have been speaking to them as well, but they really haven't had much to add in terms of what the government's been saying in Kuala Lumpur. So there obviously is frustration and above all anxiety and anguish on the parts of families.
Have you spoken to any of the families who have relations on the plane?
I spoke to a gentleman yesterday and today, and I think one of the key things really with this new suggestion from the Malaysian Prime Minister that the plane may even have made contact with a satellite at 8 o'clock in the morning, that's around the time that it was first sort of notified as going missing, have perhaps given families that little slight glimmer of hope after a week in which, of course, they've been waiting with so many false leads. But really, after so much information has come out, so much contradictory information, and as I said, you know, false hopes, I think they're very cautious as well. Although they don't want to give up hope, but they also know that after this much time, the chances of finding their relatives are obviously not good.
Not good at all. But, I mean, it's interesting, late last night they were talking about the fact that the plane had flown on for 4 hours, and then by this morning they were saying it had flown on for 7 hours, and now it looks like it might have left, gone in one direction, and then turned around and gone the opposite direction.
Yes, so we've really sort of had very confusing information. I mean, we learned quite early on that it might have turned around after heading out towards Vietnam on the scheduled journey. But we really had no idea that it might have gone so far or that it might have been in the air for so long. Now, part of this new information, it seems to be coming from the satellite analysis that American investigators have been doing. And then, of course, we know that militaries are also looking at their radars. What we don't know is whether other countries around Malaysia have been examining their own radars, seeing if they can find any trace and whether there is any sight of this missing flight. I mean, I think in many regards, one of the most astonishing things is that you could have a very large passenger jet flying around for hours, and it seems nobody had any sight of it. Nobody spotted it. Nobody realised anything was wrong until so late on.
Let me go, if I may, to Captain Evan Cullen. And you presumably are watching with great interest what has happened to this flight, MH370. It kind of seems unimaginable to us in this day and age of mobile phones and satellite and all of that, that anything could go missing. But can you fill us in on what kind of security there is on aeroplanes now? I presume since 9/11 things have changed a bit.
Good morning, Marion.
Morning to you.
There's many, many communication systems on the aircraft, and some of them are accessible from the cockpit. So some of them could be switched off if somebody in the cockpit wished to switch them off. But there are also other communication systems which cannot be switched off from the cockpit.
And what are they?
Well, for example, it's in the public domain that the engines, for example, on most modern aircraft have an independent link via satellite to the aircraft, to your engine manufacturers, so that they can give data on how the engine is performing. And this is particularly true of twin-engined wide-body aircraft that do a lot of flying over water. So the engine manufacturers are always anxious to make sure that the engines are performing on spec, because an in-flight shutdown has very serious consequences for their insurance and so on.
Oh, right. Are you kind of suggesting to me that somebody knows where this plane is?
No, first of all, I don't know anything more than what's in the media that's public. I did try and contact the Malaysian Pilots Association, but I haven't been able to get through to them yet. But the facts, as I would say this, the aircraft is no longer in the air, okay? Secondly, there was no Mayday call received.
Yeah.
And that's significant because the first thing a pilot will do in an emergency is he'll obviously control and fly the airplane. The next thing they have to do is navigate the airplane. But the third thing, and it's a very important factor, is they must communicate with the ground.
Yes, but exactly if you're up to no good, presumably you're not going to communicate with the ground, because that the transponder, Lee here, hello, do I know anything about these things? But I know the words. I mean, that there's a thing called a transponder, is there not, for communications that you have to turn off, as it were, on purpose.
Yeah, it's turned on and off for the pilots just before takeoff and just after landing. It's put into a standby mode after landing, but it's still slightly active in certain modes, even when it's turned off in the cockpit.
And what else would there be besides that?
Well, the other beacons that I would question as to why they haven't been picked up is there is a beacon which automatically comes on if the aircraft encounters a significant shock or if the beacon, the system gets wet or it touches water. And it's surprising that they have not been found yet, or nothing has been reported about that.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say to you, Marion, like, because I did have some exposure of this a number of years ago, is that there is in my mind no doubt that some security agency somewhere on the planet knows where this aircraft is to within a few hundred metres. Of that, I am fairly sure. And it just strikes me, and maybe what's coming now is that they are assisting the authorities in helping to find this aircraft, because the Malaysian authorities have been unable to do so by themselves.
Why would they keep it a secret?
Well, I think the capability of some security agencies, they don't want to expose their capabilities, and certainly they would logically, I don't agree with this, but their logic would be, we're not going to save any lives by giving away our assets. But I would say that the fact that the search area has been changed so indicates to me that some people who do know what's going on are starting to assist.
Yeah, I mean, we
if I can...
Yes, certainly. Sorry, Tanya, yeah?
Well, if I could chip in briefly here, I mean, I think some of the interesting things that we've discovered today from the Malaysian Prime Minister's belief press conference is this belief, firstly, that the transponders and the other communication systems were deliberately switched off. They were quite clear about that. And that is something that we understand would take, to disable properly, would take a fair amount of specialist knowledge, not only of planes in general, but in particular of the Boeing 777. We also know that, of course, the Americans have been using some of their satellite expertise to try and locate where the plane was. But, I mean, one of the reasons that may be taking time, in fairness, is that this is not when the aircraft sends out sort of pings to satellites to try and communicate with it, that doesn't in itself embed a location. It's just that investigators can then look back at that data and try to use that to analyse where the aircraft was. But it's not a matter of just sort of digging out a figure. It's actually something that requires a certain amount of technical expertise and time to do. So I think we are starting to see more information now. The Americans are obviously playing a key role in this investigation. I think in some ways they're trying to give Malaysians the respect, a sense of respect, show them that they're sort of still running the investigation. But actually much of the information seems to be coming from the US end, as you say.
Yeah, and possibly military people. Just before I let you go, Evan, the search of the pilot's home, you don't regard that as remarkable?
No, I wouldn't regard that as remarkable. It's certainly, there have been reports, for example, in South America, of pilots' families being held hostage and so on.
Right.
When things went awry, so... I would have thought day one that would have been the first thing to do. Checking all the passports of all of the passengers. I would have thought checking the pilot's family and their home and any unusual activity at the family home.
Right.
I would have thought that's a fairly routine day one part of the investigation.
And how difficult is it now for somebody to get into the cockpit?
It's extremely difficult, Marion. You know, it's the access is controlled. I'm not going to go into the security features, but there is beefing up, a substantial beefing up of security on board since 9/11, and we haven't had an incident. And I think if memory serves me, I read a report there in the US. The US have been using what's called sky marshals. These are armed individuals who are, you know, not one of them has drawn his gun in anger since 9/11. Now, a couple of them have intervened in what would be called, let's say, cabin disputes.
Right.
Where people have misbehaved with drink on them and so on. But none of them have, to the best of my knowledge, not one sky marshal has intervened in anger for the purpose that he was put on board for.
Right. Well, it is just the most extraordinary story, and we will all follow with interest. I pity the poor families, because, I mean, you just would like to know one way or the other. Anyway, we'll leave it there for the moment. Tanya Branigan and Evan Cullen, thank you both very, very much indeed.